Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome to Talk Straight on this September 16, 2021, Thursday night. Grateful for you to join us. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and we're grateful again, as I said, for each of you to that will join us, those who have in the past, and we look forward to some more wholesome dialogue with you tonight. The number to call the show is 657-383-0944. Again, that's 657-383-0944. We pick back up on our discussion from this past Tuesday night, where we began the robust conversation about what support is, what it means to be supportive and not exploitive. Okay? And so that's what we're gonna extend on that conversation tonight. Again, it's September 16th. Can you believe it already? 2021. The nature of support is what we began our major topic on, and we continue that, as I said. The nature of support, that's where we will focus our attention. Now, the other night we had a different text from Acts. Tonight we're going to look at Romans and 1 Corinthians. Some things that are very helpful to understand what it means to be supportive and how you can be supportive in a transformative way. Okay? Romans 15 and 1 reads, "We then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak, and not to please ourselves." Then 1 Corinthians, the 8th chapter, verses 11 through 12, repeats that. It reflects that same thought. Verse 11 says, "And through the knowledge shall the weak brother perish, for whom Christ died. But when ye sin, so ought the brethren, and wound their weak conscience, ye sin against Christ." Suggestion here is that there are individuals in our life, in our world, in our community, our society, who find themselves in a position of weakness, where they are in need of others' support, their help. However, those who are in that position who stand where they are in a position of influence, where they can be of help to others, and they are not cautious. You can make a good thing bad. So the admonition here is that you make sure that if you're in a position of strength, you have something, and you can help someone, that you don't do it for your own selfish gain or interest. That's the essence of the text. That leads us right into further discussion. 657-383-0944, that is the number to call. If you want to join us, we'll park you right here in the studio. Thank you, Facebook, for following us there. I think we're back with our Facebook live feed tonight. And for those of you that are with us, feel free to give us a call here and join us in the studio. 657-3-0944. That's the number to call. And we'll be happy to, again, include you in the discussion. So as I said earlier, this past Tuesday night, we were discussing the importance of support, right? Particularly in relationship to families and children, neighborhoods, communities that stand in need of some sort of guidance socially, economic upliftment and transformation, even spiritual improvement. Okay? That's what we were talking about. So tonight what we like to do is to take that conversation from yours truly, the host, and the guest panel that were on with us, and focus on the subtopics again a little bit further, education, which we said then was simply a process involving teaching and learning, right? It's a process. Now, the trick is knowing what it is we're teaching and how we're reaching those we're teaching what. But education is that process. But that's important. That is certainly important. And there is a need for educational support, particularly throughout American neighborhoods and communities that tend to be in urban areas, large areas, where there are people close-knitted to one another, either by choice or by force. Economics. We looked at that. And simply, when we talk about economics in the context of our conversation, we're talking about the knowledge or intelligence that concerns itself with the production and consumption and even the transfer of wealth or resources. That's very, very important. In fact, later on in the next half of the next hour of the show, I anticipate that we will have an excerpt from Dr. Claude Anderson, where he spoke of that, and he looked at that as a very, very important thing in terms of building or strengthening urban American neighborhoods, communities, and families, right, particularly throughout urban America. Well, that's what we're talking about when we talk about economic support. What is it that's going to help foster the production and consumption and transfer of wealth, not necessarily material, but wealth, a mindset, a mentality? We connected the relationship between education and economic independence on Tuesday night. And then lastly, this is where we spent a good deal of our conversation, was relative to theology. Now, I've been pastoring now for 26 and going on a half years, and I don't want anyone to get the impression that I am suggesting by any means that the role of spirituality, the church, truth, and righteousness should be dismissed or demeaned. I do speak, however, to some misrepresentation and misgiving that many have experienced for years, long before I was born, during my time, and it continues now. Hopefully, you and I can be a part of the breaking of that cycle. All right? We talked about the field this systematic study of religious beliefs and ideas and the theories that surround them. I'm summarizing what theology really is, the study. It looks at different systems of worship and belief that are connected to them and the theories that build that. We discussed how you had different other religious structures and practices that were very similar or modeled themselves after Christian doctrine that is found in the Bible, in the Old and New Testament, right? I'm not going to get into that heavily tonight, but I'm just trying to make the point to you here that there's a correlation, there's a significant aspect that could and should be looked at. And the other night, Tuesday, we posed the question, why is it? Well, I did. Me, myself, and I did. Why is it that in certain urban areas you can see 5 and 10 congregations, buildings, brick-and-mortar buildings that are listed with some name as a church? All of them identify themselves as Christian bodies. But yet you have so much despair, so much destruction, so much shame in that same neighborhood. What is it about God's word that is not reaching them? Or is it God's word, or is it the individuals? I'm talking about myself first, who are those who represent it, the arbiters of that word. That's what we have to look at. We need to focus on support in that regard. So we're going to ask James, the late James Luther Bevel, to kind of speak to that a little bit for us. And these are excerpts from individuals who have a body of work that's recorded, and we'll have some discussion from it with our panel, whomever that may be. Again, the number is 657-383-0944. As we move tonight deeper into discussion about what empowering support, I don't mean just handout, patting somebody on the head or on the back, but empowering support can do to position those people who historically have been castigated to the peripheries of society, written off, determined to be the least among us. How can what we do and what we offer as support, those who say they're interested, how can that be empowering? Now, what we've seen over the years, over the decades, in fact, is that a lot of people have said a lot of things, a lot of money has been spent, a whole lot of action has taken place, but we're still in the same spot. Who should we do it for? Those who are most vulnerable, children who are innocent that don't know any better. They were born innocent, essentially, right? Grown folk ought to get themselves together. I'm talking about me first, so that we can lay a path of comfort, security, success, and upward mobility for them. I'm convinced it can happen. How about you? All right. I want to take a minute to suggest some elements of support. So if you're going to, oftentimes, you don't know the intricate details of people's lives, particularly if you're a pastor or a doctor, a psychologist, or a social worker, or someone who takes other people's, an insurance adjuster, agent. You take people's personal information and you have a look into their life, to their affairs. And a lot of people have learned to lose faith and confidence in people who they believed to be of influence, of help to them. Because even though they've given up all of their personal information, essentially the old proverbial open up Pandora's box, their issues haven't been fixed, but their business is out there. Rather, this is a real or perceived threat to them. That's the reality. Okay? And this is a reason why a lot of people don't want to come out and don't want to share their story and don't want to everybody to, or anybody really, to help them. You know, they figured, hey, I better do it myself. So I said all that to say that what I want to do is spend a little time here tonight discussing a few ways. This is just by way of suggestion. I'm not suggesting this is comprehensive in any way, or this is the only thing that could and should happen. However, it's just some things that I'd like to bring to your attention. Right, and hopefully we'd be able to, you know, make these things a reality. And we can do something by way of empowering, as I said earlier, those who are most in need. And see, when you see how this is done in a way that the individual themselves can make a difference for themselves, whether you're there or you're gone. That's the best measurement, perhaps, of whether or not you've been useful or helpful with someone in their lives. And if we're not willing to do that, beloved, we should just leave it alone. Just walk away from it. Let it go. Let it go. Somebody say, let it go. You know, because at the end of the day, people didn't ask us to make things more difficult for them. They're not asking for that. No. Even if they are in need of support, even if they are desirous of it, and sometimes they don't even know who to turn to. They don't know who to turn to. So I'd like to, again, encourage you to give us a call here tonight, 657-383-0944. If you listen to us from the podcast, blogtalkradio.com, feel free to call again into the studio there. Looks like we're still having a little bit of an issue with our Facebook live streaming, but we keep going. What I would like to do is to, again, offer some suggestions, some ways, some ideas, some thoughts about how we might be able to help people, right, and measure the success of the aid that we offer. That's what's really important. When we can measure what we're doing and what we're pouring in and other people can see it, they can benefit from it. That is a very meaningful thing. So let me get to it. Here's some ways. For one, again, people didn't ask you to take over their business, their life. And I'll say this, even when people don't know how to do for themselves, it's just like children. They need your help, but they don't need you to rob them of the ability to grow and learn from their circumstances and situations. So what we are to do is to be coaches and supporters, giving people the opportunity to tell you what's on their mind, what's wrong with them. Now, you do this in the interest of learning just where you need to be a deficient. Sometimes you don't need to do everything. But when you come with the idea that I got an edge on you, I got the up on you, you need me, and you better accept whatever I get you, that's where the problem comes. You see? That's not very supportive at all. And so this is what I'm speaking to in terms of listening to people, allowing them to tell you what they need. You'll find that that will be very helpful down the road in one of the other suggestions that I make to you. When you listen, that will help you really be assistance to folks and to give them support. It ain't about you then. It's about them. The other thing is offering reassurance at the right time. Now, why you do that? People don't need you to specify them to baby. That's true. And that's what I've been saying. We don't, young men that are at risk to dying in the streets early, they don't need nobody to pacify. You know, however, they can use reassurance. Why is that, Doctor? That's simply not only young men, old women, people in general can use reassurance. All right? This is necessary because the reality is having to ask somebody for help, being in a position to where you have to ask somebody to help you up or to do something and you desire to be independent and do it yourself, that can often be very humiliating. You understand? It can be disparaging, especially when you're someone who has a strong, healthy self-concept and circumstances of life hits you in a way that were beyond your control. Wasn't something you wanted to happen. It did happen, though. You understand? And what happens is when people are in need, there's a tendency to say, no, that's okay. Because they ain't, you know, I don't want them to know my business anyway. And they ain't going to take my story to heart. You understand what I'm saying? You're afraid that next time you look up, everybody and their mama will be talking about your personal business because you trusted something or someone to do what was in your best interest. So my point is, again, is reassurance is key. Be reassuring. And I don't mean by be reassuring that, again, you take over and you dictate to them anything, you know. But what you want to do is to be able to let them know that I'm here and I got your back. I got your back. What you need, you know, whatever you need from me, I got you. You ain't got to worry about that. Also, you let them know that you don't have to worry about me misusing or abusing the trust that you put in me. That's very key because that's the main reason why a lot of people don't reach out for help. They're afraid their trust is going to be violated. Third thing is remaining calm and focused. Now, why you say that, Doctor? It's interesting how when you see children in particular who are very emotional, they become hyper and erratic and what have you, and crying and what have you. And when you start doing the same thing, you only make them more nervous. In general, it's important if you're going to be the support, you got to have a calm head. People don't need you just as messed up and nervous and scared as they are. You're going to be a help to them. Now, that's not easy for everybody. I understand that. But if you're going to be of support, that's critical. It's absolutely necessary that your mind be right. If you can't handle it, leave them alone. Leave them alone, because sometimes you can make things worse for them than what they are. You see what I'm saying? And then remaining calm so that you can mirror for them a supportive attitude and position. Somebody around here got some sense. All right, let's go on to number five. Display patience. Hurry up, come on now. I'm trying to help you. I ain't got all day. Well, if you can't be helpful to them, just go on, move on. Leave them alone, right? Their life is already in tatters. They're already challenging. They don't need you to be there to rush them anymore. You understand what I'm saying? That's more like a hustle than anything. If you don't come on right now and take what I got, I ain't giving you nothing. Well, you can keep on moving there. Keep it stepping. Displaying patience is vital. Now, there are some people who don't have patience. So guess what? They often don't make the best supporters. You understand what I'm saying? Because you can't be calm and you can't be focused with someone. Even when they're erratic, if you're going to be helpful to them, you got to have your mind together, have your head together. All right? Number five, refrain from making assumptions about the circumstances or the outcome or the individual. Say that again, Doctor. I said refrain yourself from making any assumptions about the situation, what the outcomes are absolutely going to be, or the individual themselves that you say you're supporting. Now, why is that key, Doctor? And that's the sixth thing. Because you have to make sure that you are accessible to them if you say that you are, and they know they can rely on you. Now, the best way to do that is to go back to one of the things I talked about earlier, and that is let people tell you what their situation is. Don't try to figure it out for them. Don't try to assume you know best or better than they do. The best physicians are those who understand that a person have lived with themselves all their life. They know how they feel. They know what they're going through. The best that the physician can do is to take their knowledge, their training, and their practice to assist them with going through that. A teacher, the best a teacher can do is to meet you where you are on your level of understanding. Huh? Sometimes doctor will look crazy. And he's a handful. But the boy got to learn. The boy got to learn some way, somewhere, by somebody. Maybe you need to take doctor a little bit and put him in the corner. Don't let nobody see you. And just tap him on the behind a little bit. Say, all right now, come on, doctor. I'm here. You understand what I'm saying? Maybe that's what he needs. But knowing that you're there, and in the end, you got his back. That's what matters. You understand what I'm saying? What I'm trying to intimate to you is what support looks like as we continue this conversation. So I gave you six things that I suggest to you that will be very helpful. Perhaps we'll review them before we end the show tonight. 657-383-0944. That's the number to call. Listen, this song right here, this young lady is singing at her uncle's funeral, and she was just moving and stirring. Somebody once asked me, what does hope sound like? Well, I would argue that she kind of emulated a little bit of what hope. 657-383-0944. You listen to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Doctor, and we look forward to hearing you song. 657-383-0944. Let's hear it through all the way through.
And trouble
thank you.
Will be over. And I have a friend in the morning.
Yeah.
When I rise, take the dust from my face. Why not?
Yeah. Now, Josh, that's what hope sound like. Have I got a witness here?
Yes, you do.
Did I get a witness to that? Come on, man. Come on, Josh.
Yes, you do.
Yes, sir. What about that 37-2? Somebody asked me once, what does hope sound like? You think that? I believe that's what hope sound like right there, 37-2.
That's what hope sound like. At the end of a tiresome, weary day, that's what hope sounds like. You can go home.
So then you can rest, can't you? You can rest.
I'm
St. Louis is online. I'm going to pose a question to him. I don't know. But let's see what he thinks. St. Louis, what say you? What say you, sir?
Say me about what? And good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us here. We're continuing our discussion from the other day, and we hit a lot about the role of spirituality and functions of beliefs and so forth in church and the plight of people's lives. But I brought in this young lady who was singing at her uncle's funeral, and I believe somebody asked me previously, what does hope sound like? That's me. That's what I think. I think it sounds jelly like that. That young girl was
what the Holy Ghost sound like.
Well, that might call up the Holy Ghost, man. You may say, yeah, look, you fool around, you, you know, a few of them help. You understand what I'm saying? But anyway.
That's when people run up and down the aisle and fall on the floor and wiggle in a frenzy.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Sometimes it looks a little peculiar, don't it? It looks a little peculiar. And if you don't understand, some people don't understand.
Yes, you know, sir. I've watched some war pictures and watched soldiers behind machine gun mowing down other soldiers, and they get in a frenzy too. Similar type.
Sure. You know why that is, right? Because that pressure of being in war-like situation like that, in battle, combat, and gun battle, has an emotional effect on people. Just like living life day by day has an emotional effect on people. You understand what I'm saying? And people deal with the stress of living life day by day differently. Some people don't know how to do it, right? In an ideal situation, we learn those. But unfortunately, some people don't. And that's kind of what we're talking about tonight. It's just tangentially what we are speaking of when we talk about the nature of support. Because there are a lot of good people out there, and we will bring the rest of the panel in, who are looking for those who they say have the answers to bring it to them. And if I might, just briefly, this may best intimate that thought. I read from Romans 15:1. It says, "We then that are strong ought bear the infirmities of the weak, and not please ourselves." If you're going to help somebody, you know, you shouldn't be the only one walking away with a benefit.
Yes.
After you done helped them 30, 72, shouldn't they be in a better position when you leave? You think 30, 72?
I believe so. If your intent was to help them, certainly.
Right. So, Josh, here's what happens. So, quite often, especially in larger social contexts, individuals go looking for assistance, for guidance, something in return, and when they leave, they're just as broke as they were with regards to what they were looking for when they got there, Josh. Now, how can we change that, Josh? Who could change that?
We can change that really quickly. Really.
Talk to me, man.
Talk to me.
How you do that? What's your thought on it?
Change our beliefs. Change our thought process. Mm.
Okay.
It's all about what we think in the morning. Are we going to sit down on ourselves? Are we going to rise up in the morning?
Okay. All right. Now, Joshua, I'm going to bring in Dr. Claude Anderson. We talked about this a little bit. We hit on it a little bit Tuesday, and to have him reiterate a thought about some things in terms of economic support, right? And then James Luther Bevel as well, because we did previous shows with both of these individuals. I just want to bring those in. We hit that before, but that speaks to what support looks like. Now, some people would think that it's just about giving something, handouts, and pacifiers, I call them, as opposed to empowering people with information that they can use to be independent in their come-up. And that's really what we want to look at in just a little bit. But, St. Louis, did you want to add anything else to that before we move on in our discussion?
No, I think you covered it.
Okay.
Fairly decent.
So, thank you, sir. So one of the things that I focused on in the monologue is the fact that, I want to reiterate that I don't believe that I have all the answers. I'm not suggesting that at all. But the other day we were connecting three very, very important things or needs for support, and that was for the education of our young folks. We've been talking about that a lot, and I think you can see that in the current events in the media and what have you, as well as the need for focused economic development. Now, if you're not involved in that process and someone else is always leading, dictating, determining, are you in control? Are you in control? Now, I know we've said a lot of times that the voter has the power because you can determine certain things. But if, with all due respect, you're ignorant of the power that you have, it's just like being a baby, vulnerable. Yeah, you got the power, but if you don't know about it, what good is it for you? Joshua, you hit it hard, brother, when you talked about our theology. Watch this, Josh. Really, when you study theology, you're looking at systematic religious beliefs, right, and the theories that men create to justify certain practices, certain behaviors, and even certain controls over individuals in the name of what? God, belief, deity. Now, does that take anything away from the Word of God? I would say not. However, as I just read from the text there in Romans, what the text suggests to us is that we ought to be focused about helping those who are weak, right, and not helping ourselves. Pastor Wallace joined us, and I know he's going to have a lot to say about it. Pastor, if even as a preacher, now, and I started off the show by saying I'm not trying to denigrate preachers because I'm one myself, been pastor for 26 and a half years now. But if preachers, Pastor Waller, are going to benefit from the weight of control and loyalty and trust that people place in that position, which they should, I believe, then shouldn't we make sure our stuff is together first, Pastor, before we come at the door? Welcome to
the show. Because it could be detrimental if you don't. You know, it's detrimental because it would cause be a pretender. You know, it's like pretending to be something else, and that's deceiving people. It's deceiving yourself. And, I mean, I'm talking about me now. So it would be just like me, you know, going out and saying I know something that I don't know. And it's like me knowing something and withhold something that I know from the ones that seek it. And so, yeah, I mean, it's important to be able to not deny that you know something. I mean, I heard you say earlier that you didn't know everything, but what you do know, I mean, is valuable. And
sure,
that's what counts. I mean, I believe that's what you're talking about, you know, with the willingness to teach what you know and not what you think. See, a lot of times, you know, you may hear me say, oh, I don't deal with opinions too well because I got my life got messed up as a part of that. You know, that's how I got caught in the trap, my own opinion. And I know opinions do exist, but I do all I can do to stay away from them unless I know, you know, that it's just a long shot. You know, it's just like me with a basketball in my hand, you know, I turn this back over to you if I say this. And I say, okay, well, I make this shot, and then I make it. And then somebody else get ready to shoot. I say, he's not going to make that shot. And he make it. You know, that was my opinion, whether he hit it or not. That was still my opinion. I didn't know whether he was going to make it or not. I said, he's not going to make that shot. And, you know, and things like that. I mean, that's just a simple way of putting, I may be wrong. But if I can say that God delivered me from something, I must know what I'm talking about when I say that. Because if I don't, you know, that's misleading. So, yeah, you should know what you're supposed to bring to the table.
Okay. Yes. Thank you for it. Josh, let me ask you something. How long you been living in your body?
Till I was born.
All right. And who know you or how you feel better than you?
God.
What?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me. You mind if I ask 3072 that question? 3072.
Okay.
All the years you've been on this earth, who knows you better than you do?
Other than God, I do. I mean, and I think too that we should be careful with thinking something is wrong, like Pastor Waller was saying. about, you know, maybe unintentionally leading people down a wrong path because our experiences were different. So if we haven't experienced something like you're getting at, who better knows what your symptoms are, what affects you, what helps you, what you know what I'm saying? So with that being said, if you don't have the answers, you should just work with that person to help them find resources and the answers to, we're not equipped to have been through dope dealing or drug addiction or prostitution or whatever. Maybe that wasn't our experiences, but it was certainly somebody else's, and somebody else have overcome them. We can just maybe seek help with them to somebody that can.
Absolutely. Well,
but
you
not
know,
sell them a bunch of dreams and misinformation just because, again, we're putting our own egos there in place of them needing help.
That's right. That's absolutely right. I was just going to say that I understand St. Louis is retired. He's a retired engineer, right? And the last thing I'm going to do is to jump and try to tell somebody how to build or construct an edifice or building. Because if it falls down on me, that's going to be on me. Now, just because somebody comes to me in St. Louis and asks me how you do it, is it reasonable for me to just jump up? Or should I relinquish or turn it over to somebody like yourself who got a little experience? I ask that question because it's relative to some other things. What do you think about that, St. Louis?
Well, the obvious thing would do is what you said, but many people will say, wait here, I go come back with the information and sell it to them.
Which is sell it up. Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm. Which doesn't apply.
I would do it next. About three ways you can do something like that. You can tell it. I know that you should do it like this. That's one way of telling it. Another way is you get the resources and information from somebody and then tell it to that person. That's one on the second. And then, or you just stay out of it altogether.
And Josh, I think that may be the best choice right there. Now, even though I'm a pastor and I may have people come to me and ask me questions about that, I'm not an expert in engineering. Why shouldn't I refer them to someone like St. Louis who has that background? You understand what I'm saying? And it kind of gets to the point that I'm talking about. We never, if you're going to offer somebody support, you got to know where your limits are as well. You see what I mean? And you got to know when it's a time for you to back out, to be assertive, to be there, and to back out, because there's sometimes where they got to do it for themselves. I never will forget when my children learn how to ride the bike. You know, I'm there trying to hold my daughter up, bless her heart. She keep on kicking me away. I want to do it. It took her to fall a few times, but guess what? By me getting out of her way, you understand what I'm saying? I did enough, Josh, to get her the bike and to provide her the venue to practice, and then I held up a little bit, and she wanted to figure it out for herself, man. She scraped her little legs up a little bit, but after she got it, she's been riding ever since, man. You know what I'm saying, Josh? Mm-hmm. It's okay for you to know when something, and this is what happens a lot of times in churches, Pastor Wall. You know, people don't go out, and sometimes they don't know who the experts are in various fields and who they could really turn to or trust. So they go to the one person they know or have been taught to trust, and that's the preacher. If the preacher's not honest about the fact that, listen, there are some people, others, that are best qualified to talk to you about economic development, better qualified to deal with severe psychological needs, right? better qualified to deal with your educational concerns. I'm not saying that preachers can't know those or should know those or even don't, but knowing that there's a proper place for everything and everybody, it keeps you from overloading yourself when you can't handle it, because when you fall and they fall, what good is it? What good are you to them? You understand what I'm saying, 72? Your legs are just as weak as mine. I don't want you to, hey, I ain't jumping on your back, so we both going to fall.
Exactly.
You talking about
running a group of gangsters out when you don't even have a firearm. Like, right. It's knowing your limits.
And sometimes, or too often, what we see in urban American situations, there are some people, Pastor Wallace, that are just not ready to be patient enough with those who are most in need, to show them the compassion that they need first. Because, see, you got to understand that you, before you can start skinning that fish, it's real slippery and it's evasive. You got to catch them first. What about that, Pastor? You got to be able to catch that rascal first. And sometimes they can turn different colors on you. Huh, Pastor? if you don't mind my analogy.
Yeah, because first thing first, you know, you got to catch it before you can do anything with it.
Right.
You know, that's the most important part about, you know, fishing. I'm not talking about in the lake. I'm talking about fishing for men. You know, the word says he would make a person a fish of men. And, you know, in doing so, you have to utilize the proper bait. You know,
Say that one more time, please. You
got to
use the proper what, man?
The proper bait, man. I mean, like, it's not people that are out there hurting, and then you get the proper bait, and then you tell them that they can do something that they possibly can do for that moment, but don't know how to stay with it.
You know, there you go. Talk to me. That's not good. Right. You know, I'm almost of the position, Pastor and rest of the panel. The one power that people that are addicted have is having access to the money or resources to sustain their addiction. If you really want to help them, don't just give them money they can run off to hurt themselves with, because that's what you find often when they overdose.
Yeah.
And some of them are out there. Some of them are out there so rough with it that they'll do almost anything just to get there. But if you really care about them, what you'll tell them is, look, I'm gonna give you food, and if I can, I'm going to give you shelter. What I'm not going to do is to give you cash so that you can give yourself more rope to hurt yourself. Now, that's love right there. Maybe I'm wrong. Josh, you going to say something?
No. I was just agreeing with you.
That's the greatest love right there. You know what I'm saying?
And
when the same,
that doesn't even go for that. That could go more than just for somebody that's, you know, strung out on drugs. It could be just an irresponsible person even. So you haven't worked because you don't want to work. And, why am I going to keep supplying your needs to go out and buy shoes or get your nails done? Maybe I am financially able to give you $500, $1,000, but what are you doing with that? Is this just for you to have fun and play with, or to actually feed you or help pay your bills or, you know? Yeah, so, it can go multiple ways.
That is a great point, because I've seen that
very,
where we had. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Pastor.
Yeah.
No, that's very true. I was just saying that's very true. You know, you got to be mindful of that. It's important not to hinder someone by doing, you know, all the things for them when they can learn how to do things. You know, that's why I think you have to utilize the proper bait.
Sure.
That's very important.
And many times people misassociate with, well, they're not on drugs or this and that, but they still are living an irresponsible life. So, again, How am I helping you? Because you're deciding not to make good decisions for yourself, wholesome decisions. And I'm doing okay. I'm making responsible decisions each day. That's not helping you. What I'm doing is enabling you and allowing you to use me as a crutch or someplace, a resource for you to keep coming back and playing games with. So I'm hurting myself and you in the process.
And it will hinder you every day of your life if you keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wow. Well, I mean, and, you know, some people might argue that you don't know what they've been through. No,
right.
I don't. But I know what I don't want to see them keep going through. And I understand I'm not helping them to change their behavior. It's called learning
mm-hmm.
helping. That's really
mm-hmm.
what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sort of psychological orientation where you learn to be helpless
that's
and
right.
rely on somebody all the time. And that's no good. Now, so how do we, now, we talked back, I've heard you in 72 talk about compassion. How do you be firm, yet fair and consistent, though? In that approach, when we're talking about support now. We're talking about support. Now, and we listen, come on now. We're talking about my people. And I may have been like that myself where, I was a little too lazy to get on up and go get what I needed, so I missed out on it. The store closed on me. So I was sitting at home there, and I had to call Josh and say, hey, Josh, give me a piece of that bread, man. Now, that's mm-hmm. Josh's last piece of bread. He brought the dipping and some peanut butter and jelly, and I'm going to ask him for his last piece of bread. I could have had my own, though, Jack. Could have had my own. Huh? Would you give me that thing?
It's all about it, if we are supposed to feed our own. We are supposed to fend, for our own. If we're not fending for our own, what are we doing all day long in the house all day?
What?
We're doing nothing. We are doing nothing. We are always providing somebody else with the answers. We are always providing somebody else with the tools. We are always providing the answers to whatever it is, and we're not finding it for ourselves. So why is it? And the answer is we don't want to. That's all it is. We don't want to.
Okay.
It's a common question. We don't want to.
Don't. Now,
there was one guy. We were taking food to places, me and my pops, and there was a guy. And he was so big, and we made a delivery, and it was only across the street, but he wouldn't take his butt down the street to find his own and then phone to somebody else.
Wow.
Do that. So how is that finding your own?
It's not. It's not.
And all that stuff, but you want somebody else to find it. Like, that's just laziness.
Well,
Josh.
Go ahead, 72, then I'll respond to it.
No,
go
I
ahead.
Was just going to say, again, back to compassion, and I think that's where we all get a little torn and confused
okay.
with, okay, I should be compassionate, and you should, like that guy Josh
mm-hmm.
was talking about. So maybe what I would have done, I wouldn't have went for you, but I will go with you if you're feeling
mm-hmm.
embarrassed or if you
okay.
don't have a way or whatever. No, but I'm not going to go for you.
Mm-hmm.
I will make time to go with you.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
I'm
if you
Josh,
need somebody
I'm
just to stand by you and encourage you to
right.
get this, and no, I'll do that even, but I'm not going for you.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
3072 and Josh, when I started the monologue, I offered 6 suggestions about those who say they want to give support, how you should prepare yourself. The second thing
mm-hmm.
was to be reassuring to people. And by that, what I meant is recognizing that there are people who legitimately need help, and it's humiliating for them. It can be disparaging
mm-hmm.
for them. You understand what I'm saying? So you don't
yeah.
want to
mm-hmm.
come in a way that seems like you are casting some sort of judgment on a circumstance or
right.
a situation.
Right.
But you do want to let them know that I'm only here to help. Now, Josh, you weren't
mm-hmm.
helping him if he could walk to you now and get that food and you took it to him anyway, you're not helping him none.
Mm-hmm.
You tell him to
and he
bread.
Complaining when you get there with it. He complaining. He don't eat that. He don't like this. What they get put this in if, you know, no.
What? Well, now, come on, man. Ain't nobody going to do that mm-hmm. out of class a while. They, well, that
they've
out.
Done it.
Come on, back.
They have done it.
Go ahead, Pat. What do you say?
Well, you know, Josh said it best, you know. In other words, it does exist, you know. Yeah. Got to be mindful of it.
Yeah.
It does. But
let's take this to
the Go ahead.
No, go ahead,
Pastor.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say I'm going to set up Dr. Claude Anderson, and I was going to say let's open up the discussion then about how do you help people who've been broke all their life,
mm-hmm.
who struggle, and they say they can't afford, they're so broke they can't afford to pay attention. How do you help those people? Is it any help for them? And if so, how do you help them, right? So that's the question that I want to ask you all to help me with. And I'm gonna thread up old Claude Anderson. But y'all want to start that because I want you to just listen to what he said in a very brief piece and see if there's something that we're missing in the equation to helping people. But see, at the end of the day, I see now where the government is getting ready to put a whole lot of money out there, and some people in Congress trying to pass bills so that. And the argument is these people need it. They're struggling. I don't doubt that there are some people struggling, right? But to your point, Joshua in 72, what could they have done before others stepped in? And anybody hit that before I go to Anderson? What else could
yeah, well,
for them? Go ahead.
And I think asking that what could they have done is past tense. That's gone.
Okay.
But what are you willing to do now? You know what I'm saying? Because nobody can go back and change yesterday and that you were not responsible or that you maybe even didn't care or maybe you were purposely trying to get over on somebody else.
I see.
But it's a new day. God grants us new
mm-hmm.
chances and new everything. So, okay, today, what
okay.
are you willing to do different?
And is that compassion? Go ahead, Samuel. Go ahead.
I don't think they're going to do anything different myself.
Mm.
And just like people taking down statues a day of
mm-hmm.
soldiers, that existed over 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these people that find themselves in these predicaments, what did they do early on in their life that led them to have these bad times? And the ones that I keep saying that the ones that's doing right and need the assistance, that's where the assistance should be going.
Okay.
Because if you don't put it there, guess what? They end up like these other ones.
Well, I have to disagree.
And then I want to say something.
Respectfully.
Because if you don't take care of the ones that's in there in school, going to school every day, keeping their nose against the grinding wheel, and they need to have the resources so that they can end up being in a position where they don't have to be asking for help, unless you have a tragedy. But you got people that just want to stay there. We have a deal saying generation after generation after generation. So I'm looking for those who's working not to be in that position. And those are the ones I'm going to hire.
I see. Okay. Well, Colonel, do you mind if we get some dialogue there? Turn it to him, Josh, want to weigh in. So
yeah,
go ahead. Where did he go wrong, 72?
Well, I was just going to say I disagree with, again, the lack of compassion. Nobody is the exact same, even the people that's still on welfare. But some people have woken up and come to realize the mistakes of yesterday. And maybe if given another chance, you have to give people a chance to do better. So, yeah, that's great for those that are thriving and growing and, you know, increasing everything that they have. But, again, we still got to give people a chance that is willing to catch up and come up to the finish line to do that.
So
we shouldn't just stop trying to help them.
I see. Well, St. Louis, I'm going to give you an opportunity after Josh to come back, and then we'll bring Dr. Anderson in because that's interesting. That's kind of what he speaks to. But go ahead, Josh. What were you
going to
say, man?
And another thing is, do you know we are one of the most one of the most that gain the most weight? Like, we are so fat in all these states.
Hey, don't be talking about me, Josh. Don't be talking about me, man.
No, I am just serious. We are one of the most, we are one of the most,
obese.
These McDonald's and all this stuff. Everybody wants McDonald's. Everybody wants McDonald's.
Hold up, man.
Everybody wants McDonald's.
Okay. I'm listening. I'm guilty, Josh. Now, you're talking about me, brother. I just want you to know that. Y'all on my shoes, man. Y'all on my shoes, brother. But okay. Now your point though is that there should be some sort of personal discipline and sacrifice. Is that what you're saying, Josh? Even with an appetite.
Yes. Because we are overweight, and it's sad to say, but
it's
a true fact.
The data pans that out even before COVID that. African Americans had the highest, in comparison, rates of diabetes, high blood pressure, hypertension, and things of that nature. You know, and it just makes sense to be honest about that, right? You know, I can't have my Häagen-Dazs ice cream, Josh. You're making me feel bad now. You know what I'm saying? And the music. Well, You showed them how to rain on a man's parade, Jack. No, but I take what you're saying. Okay,
yeah.
All right. Well, I wanted to give. Will you finish, Josh?
Never mind. What were you saying?
I wanted to give St. Louis an opportunity to respond to you guys' rebuttal before we listen to Dr. Henderson there. And Pastor Wally, if you want to jump in, you know, just get in where you fit in there. Say, look, did you want to respond to anything they were
saying? It's very simple.
Okay.
You got very limited resources.
Right.
That must be
right.
A fact because you hear organization big and all the time.
I'm one of them.
So right. You take your limited resources and you apply it on the lower end working with the young children, getting them prepared. Providing them with resources. They say by 2030 there's going to be a need for 4.5 million manufacturing positions. And that goes from 3D printing. That goes for transportation. That goes for manufacturing engineers.
Okay.
And everyone that's associated with making that industry move. 4.5 million manufacturing jobs, thanks to Donald Trump and his foresight and the meetings he had with manufacturers. So what should you be preparing your children for?
Interesting.
You prepare them for what they can feel the need. If not, then they're going to be on the wayside.
Right.
If not, they're going to be part of those who's going to be in the dire straits. Now, those that's in dire straits, if you got some organizations that want to come out of their pocket and be humble, that's up to them.
Mm-hmm.
But the money for education and more needs to be expended, and parents and family need to prepare their child so they don't end up in this circumstance. Because if you just tend to the circumstances, it will never stop. Because the child won't be prepared, and they're going to be fed right into more circumstances. Circumstance.
Wow.
And you have people going around, you ask them, how you doing? I'm struggling. I'm on the front line.
Maintain. Hold
I'm trying to stay ahead of the man.
Let me say this. My son is in Milwaukee right now. His job is in Cleveland. They sent him there because they bought out one of their competitors. The point I'm trying to make is that he's going there to look at their equipment so he can help determine what to bring back to Cleveland. That means some people are going to lose their jobs in Milwaukee. And he was talking to me about it. He said, he really hated that part of his job required him to essentially help facilitate them because they're not going to be invited to come to Cleveland and still do the same thing they were doing. But that kind of speaks to the point you're making, and that is there is a gap, you know what I mean, between some jobs that are constantly being built and that are being available, but people don't have the skill set or the training or the education to qualify for them. Some would say that's not fair. And so, you know, I was saying to him, well, unfortunately, the circumstances were like that, and there's nothing you can do about it. But your job is to go there and look at those machines and come back with good recommendations about what to bring from there to where you are. I mean, it's when you have compassion, you don't like to see people in those situations. That's the main point that I'm trying to make. And there's only so much you can do. So, Pastor, you've met him. I would just hope that his dreams, as he shared with you, of being able to reach back and catch some young guy, you know what I mean, where he is and help him be in a better position down the road. That's what you have to go to sleep at night on, is that, you know.
Well,
some things
I can... He should have that young guy. Isn't he going to build a family?
You say he should have him? What you say?
He should have a young guy.
Sure,
build a family.
Yeah. No, but I'm talking about those that are currently St. Louis, some middle schooler, some elementary school child that can benefit from his tutoring. You know what I mean? Mentorship. That's what I'm speaking of. Then that, you know what I mean? Same little young fellow.
Well, I tell you what, I wouldn't try to go in no public school talking that stuff because they'd run you out of there. But I'd be ran. Would others have been ran out of public schools because they don't want them kids to hear that. And they'll be black ran schools too. Black superintendents, mm-hmm. black principals, black everything. They don't want their kids to hear that.
I have experienced that personally. I've experienced that personally. That. Some folk did not want me to say what I was saying, dude. But anyway, that's
right.
Story. I mean, that's
a problem. They want you to give them your bio and what you're going to talk about.
Yeah. Well, okay. Pastor, did you want to say anything before we bring Dr. Anderson in?
Anytime you're going to have God in it, you know what I mean? Everything different, what you can. Rich, whether you get smart, whether you get all those things that you can get. God is a God of compassion. You know, he has so much compassion that if a person already is doing what's right, it's already, you would call winning, walking upright, doing a lot of things, prospering in life, getting a lot of money. You know, those are not the people that he's talking about. He says, you know, if a person is not aware, those are the ones he comes for. He said, the ones already upright, don't think they need him. He said, look here. He said, in them account, he's not even, he don't even have him on the agenda. I mean, according to the scripture. You know,
okay.
Now I'm talking about according to the scripture. He says, righteous people does not need paraphrasing. Because it says, you know, but sick people do, people that don't know things. They're the ones who need it. He said, I come for them. And he told the ones who think they're so smart and intelligent, he said, go learn what that means. He let it be known. I mean, this is what he said in the scripture. He let it be known what he came for. Now, if he came to help the lost and those that was less fortunate, that says a lot right there. So I'd rather stand on what he said than go on what I said or what I think or what I feel or how I believe. No. What I believe don't stand a chance with what he said. So I like to just stay humble and always know that I have to consider myself being in a situation like those that are still in the situation that I used to be in. You know, now for me to forget all about them as if they're nothing, that would be a disrespect. You know, seeing what and how I came out of what I was in. So I have to always remember that. I can listen to people and I can grab a hold of something real quick and run with it.
Uh-huh.
Because it sounds
okay.
Yeah, man, care more about yourself. Forget about people don't have nothing. You know, the ones used to be on drugs, let them stay out there on drugs. You used to be on there, but act like you never have been before. I mean, you know, that would be the thought because I worked so hard at it. You understand what I'm saying? At the willingness now. I'm not talking about by force. That's just in the lane that I'm in, but everybody has to get in their own lane. And that's why I stay in my lane. I don't trust nobody else's lane because it's important to know what my assignment is, so I keep it right there.
Right. Okay. Interesting point. You know, at the end of the day, two things have to happen. The teacher has to be willing to teach or share information, but the student has to be open to receiving that information and mastering it. Both those things have to happen. And the challenge is getting everybody in place to do what they have to do for teaching and learning take place, right? Now, I would argue that, as I said before, you can't teach somebody you can't reach. Now, when it comes to those people who are most in need, the scripture told us, we read the scripture, we read the text in Romans, the strong ought to be ready to bear the infirmity of the weak. Now, does that mean you allow people to make a fool out of you? I don't think so. But there are some lessons that can be...
No, if you don't mind, I like to say that right there. No, it don't mean you make a fool out of yourself. It just means you stay humble and understand that you can consider yourself being in that same position. Would you want a person to take the time out? Some get that sooner than others. Some don't learn at the same pace at all times. But it's just like not giving up on it. That's the key to it. And then you're not taking that from yourself when you do that once you're applying what the order is. When he says, you know, he's dedicating himself. He said, we men who are strong all to bear the infirmities of the weak. And then he put a handle on it right here. He says, watch this, guys. Then he put a handle on it. I like the handle they put on it. He said, not to please ourselves. You know?
By God.
You know what I mean? That's what the handle come in at, because I could be wanting to handle, I could be wanting to do something, and they don't get it right then. Then I said, oh, forget about it. I ain't got it. I'm not going to go no further with it. But he said, well, that's when you stop treating yourself, Rick, because if I did that, man, I'd shut down the whole city of Nashville when it come down to knowing that I've given it a shot. You know, I've been reaching out, but they still don't get it. So I'm just going to give up on it right now, because I just heard somebody say something that kind of caused me to drift away from what the truth really is, man. So, the picture that you read is very valuable, but it's something that's strong about it. You have to be constantly ready. But that person at that moment could be ready for a change, could be already.
Wow.
And then after they ready to get it, I already gave up on them now. So they're like, man, what's that Rick at? Or whatever they call me. Man, I'm ready to turn it over now. So say that. Man, what are you doing? He just forgot all about it. Man, just when I'm ready to really get out with it, I'm just saying that. You never know when they're ready. It's not my job to say when they're ready. My job is
to... But that's right. But, Pastor, it's their job, too. Now, you can convey that, hey, it look like ain't nothing moving right now. There's no smoke coming from the train. So, hey, when you get it fired up and ready to go again, give me a holler. But, no, I would not just keep wasting the energy there if they are not ready. They have to be honest, again, about receiving what you're trying to give to them, too.
Yes,
because somebody else that is ready and desperately in need of that help could be using that instead of them wasting it.
Yeah, that's very true. But these are the ones that are ready, that are showing up ready, but just don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
So you have to be understanding. That's why it takes a real teacher who know how to teach in that area, because when a person is ready, you can tell. They may not know how to do it, but I can see that they're really, really, really putting the effort at it, but they just don't know how to do it. You know, it's just like me training people how to deal with. I'm training people on the basketball court, and, you know, and I'm utilizing it with the thought of what we're talking about now. I know within them they really know how to do it. Once they've been taught, they just don't know how to do it until that time kick in.
Right.
And when I'm learning about people trying to show them how to shoot a layup, how to jump off the right foot, and then when they go in by themselves and stop because they realize they're not doing it right, first I had to tell them they're not doing it right. Now they're growing and they're knowing by the time they get ready to try to lay it up, they realize I jumped off the wrong foot. But see, that's they're growing into it, so they didn't get it right. So I'm using that and saying that those are the ones that are really willing. Just have to give them that kind of time because they're really ready. But those that are not ready, no, you don't want to force them into, you know what I mean? No kind of way. It's never, always by choice, never by force.
Okay.
It just depends on if they are truly committed to it yet. If they're not committed, then you leave them. Until they committed. If they aren't, then it's their turn. If they turn to do the turn on two train, is all I'll say.
Josh, you know what Frederick Douglass said? He was reported, he was reported as saying that, I didn't know I was a slave until I was told I can do what I wanted to for myself. And there are some people, they want to do, but they've been hamstringed and prohibited from doing. That's what they don't like. Go ahead, St. Louis, right quickly, and then we'll go to Dr. Anderson.
Well, Frederick Douglass told John Brown, I ain't going with you. Harry Tubman, too. And lucky he didn't, because Robert E. Lee killed him. But you know, there's a high, there's a school in St. Louis, it's probably more than one, that's sponsored by the Jesuits. It's called Lowell Academy. Are you familiar with that?
Okay. I've heard of that. Yes.
They
sir.
They don't have, they took all the they don't have any basketball courts in that school.
Yeah.
It's all black.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now when they come out to exercise, they play lacrosse. Well, no basketball, no football. And that school is designed to prepare black students to go into it's a middle school, and it's designed to prepare black students to go into Vianney High School, which is another Jesuit high school.
Sure, sure. Well, and without getting too far into that, they have a very interesting curricular focus, I would say, in terms of their approach to addressing high-risk students or those who historically have been marginalized academically. But very interesting point there. Okay, okay. Let me bring Dr. Anderson in right quick, guys, and then get your feedback from him. And then we'll go from there.
There's a direct relationship between the head of the physicist and being in prison. Go find an agent, 7 agents you can find in American prison. He'll be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black, because you don't go black, go have an affidavit. There's a direct link. Black don't practice group economics. Black don't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that fire story building. You set yourself to get wiped out. Understand it makes a wage with it. Economics. If you build the first floor, economics, build your businesses and your industry, control buildings and industry, and put that pool in your money, and hold that money, and practice economics with it. I got an Asian money bouncing 12 or 13 times with me, money bouncing 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics.
So let me ask you this. He suggested that there's a correlation between meeting the criteria to wind up in prison and not having your own business or business concept or economic independence. Would anybody disagree with that? Or get
that? Well, I do, but it's a little bit more difficult than that. I've heard that before. That statement has a lot of flaws. And first, he's talking to blacks as if they're a separate entity in this country, which they're not. But I understand what he's saying.
Okay.
And it's a little bit more harder than that.
So it's more detailed. And that's only an excerpt of he has a whole body of work. That's just one little piece of it. I recognize that. I don't want to give the impression that that's absolutely, you know what I mean? That's why we're just kind of talking.
Mm-hmm.
I understand what you're saying, though. There are more nuances to the issue there. But, okay. What about you, Pasquale? Do you think that if, collectively speaking, blacks had more control of their economics or businesses and things of that nature, that they would be in a better position to avoid the criminal justice system?
Well, now, big hands down, you know, and it's like, you know, when you have the right equipment in whatever the arena is, have a heart to do what's right,
mm-hmm.
and put God first. God first in everything with me now today, so I got to always remember that. You know, saying
right,
all
right.
of my ways acknowledge Him. But to have Him first, as you said, seek Him first, not second, third, fourth, or not at all, but seek Him first.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And with all of the things that's needed, whether it's a small amount or a large amount, and utilize togetherness, the power of togetherness. Man, I mean, the rich can have all the riches that they can have. And, you know, if we got God in it and utilize the small amount that we have,
mm-hmm.
I think we're going to need more value to the Lord than for all the ones who have the wealth.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
Because that's
okay.
just where it is. You acknowledge Him. And then if we start the process and get a whole lot of the things that we need as a result of putting Him first, then we can look back and say, I'm glad I did put it first, because
mm-hmm.
look at how things are changing that for us. You know, see, when people
okay.
got the upper hand on you, and they are, like, for instance, You know, if you have $100 and I have $2, you know what I mean? That means you have more than I have, you know, and you're going to utilize that as if that you have more authority over me because you have $100 and I only have $2. But when you put the Lord in it, remember I said when you put the Lord in it, $100 don't mean nothing compared to the $2 I have.
Okay.
It's not as strong as $100. You can be boastful, you can say all those things that you want to, but I know I got the Lord on my side.
Okay.
I'm coming to you, Josh. I want to say something, but let me pose a question to you, as you said. Which is more valuable, Josh, 100 pennies or a paper dollar? Yeah, go ahead, Josh. You can ask the floor.
I would say neither. The Lord.
What? All right, go ahead. Go ahead, Josh. You got the floor.
You said which one? I said neither. The Lord, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Okay. All right.
That's why I have three earrings. I have the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
I see. Okay. All right. You were going to say something else. Let me go ahead and give you that opportunity to say something else.
I was about to say, it doesn't matter how much money you have. If you have a nickel, and you have the Lord on your side,
okay,
that is more powerful than any $1,000, and you don't have the Lord on your side.
Interesting. Okay.
How come so many businesses go out of business?
Well, I'm going to ask him. That's a good question. I'm going to ask Josh to help me with something now. Josh, the Lord is good, and he's great, right? But you know, Josh, that you can't go to the electric company or to the gas company or to your landlord or to the mortgage company and say, the Lord is good, he's great, and he's going to take care of my rent, but you don't give him no money. You realize that, right, Josh? And that being the case, what it speaks to is God is good enough to give us the wisdom, the knowledge, and the understanding to what? Position ourselves to do that.
Yes. But some people do it. Some people have thousands and thousands of dollars, and they don't need all of that, and they could give it to other people that don't have almost anything. Give it all to themselves. You get what I'm saying?
I follow you.
I'm saying that was just an example. Of course, our feet. Of course, we need a shirt, and of course, we need stuff. Oh my goodness!
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, St. Louis is going to say something right quick.
You in Nashville, aren't you, Reuben?
Yes, sir, I am.
Where you buy your gas for your car?
Couple of different gas stations. Kroger's mostly, because I can get some points on my car.
And other than Kroger's, you got other gas marks, little gas station. Many of them are owned by Mideasterners, right?
Sure. I know a few of them. Yes.
And their God is Allah. As a matter of fact, they tell you, Allah Akbar.
Okay. All right.
And
okay, what?
They own all the gas stations, food marts. They compete with Kroger's. But they, and then you look at Kroger's over there in Memphis, they had to close 3 stores.
And where?
Because of theft in Memphis.
Kroger in
Memphis,
where?
Tennessee.
Oh, okay. Memphis, okay.
Now, here's the thing. All well and good, but the proof has to be in the pudding.
All right. All right.
And depending how people use whatever it is that they want to use, it can be motivational,
mm-hmm.
or it can be, well, I've done everything, it looks like I got everything right, and it's up to, it could be luck.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever they want to call it. But the thing is, it has to work.
Okay.
It has to work, especially if you're able to convince some people to go along with it in some form
mm-hmm.
or fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it don't work and it fails, you can do whatever you want to. From then on, to motivate yourself under any pretense. But those people that fail with you, they're going to say, well, I ain't got time next time.
Well, that's true. They'd be disappointed. They'd be disappointed. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I want to, if I might, I want to send that same, that similar question to 372, because I think I know what she's going to say, though. But 72... Let's go back to the analogy of the currency, right?
Mm-hmm.
The dollar bill, the paper dollar, the tender note,
mm-hmm.
versus 100 pennies. I asked Josh which one was better. What's your thought on that? I'm gonna answer my own question when you finish, because that's related to what we're talking about in terms of economic.
Well, I believe that they both have the same value. So, hey, that with that being said, okay, then I would have to think some other way. Okay, well, maybe the dollar bill can be torn up or something, but at least if I had 100 pennies, you know, I could save 1, 2, 10, 25, 75, but the value
right.
is still the same. So if I was going to look at anything other than its value, then I would say the penny.
Okay. Would you agree then that what's most important is not the one paper dollar or the 100 individual pennies, but as you're pointing out, how you acquire them? And
sure.
That's where
the value.
The rubber meets the road. And this is what I think Dr. Anderson was getting at. When we're careful, when we're strategic, and we're wise about what we do to acquire resources and how we not only acquire them, but we grow them and build them and recycle them, then we're in a better position, a much better position to do as he was suggesting, to compete economically. That's what's supporting us. Anybody that's telling you that you just need a good job or you need to go and qualify for some program or some government resources, and they're not focused on showing you how to make a dollar out of penny, out of dimes, out of nickels, a quarter, or even a $1 piece, whatever it is. If we're not having that discussion, I'm not sure where I'm going. And I
sure, well.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Or the idea that you have to come from a good, affluent family. There's been crack babies that have made, remarkable history with their lives. you know,
that's
because
so
they landed in the right hand. Now, sure, they were a byproduct of a bad situation.
Yeah.
But again, it's about what you're doing and how you allow yourself to be used to be turned around, your eagerness
yes.
even to be turned around.
Sure. And
so,
like
I mean, the race is not always given to the Swiss. Well, because my dad was a doctor or engineer or a lawyer or this and that. Some of those children turn out to be the worst, the homeless people, the crazies, the dope
yeah.
drug addicts, the, you
yeah.
know. Again, it's just about God, for one. I'm sorry, I'm a strong believer in that. And two, you and your vessel and how you allow yourself to be used. Your hunger, your thirst.
Excuse me, that sounds like good success to me, 3072. That sounds like good success, you know, from what
yes,
you're saying.
I know a few
yeah.
who mamas was doing some terrible things, and their lives are beautiful today.
Yeah, yeah. My project in my book, he's one of them success stories.
Yes, sir.
He's one of them. Yes,
well,
yes.
I think the takeaway, guys, here is that it's not so much the currency itself as it is the person and what they do with that currency.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
Josh,
right.
Josh, you see where I'm coming from, Josh?
Because
they have big sums of money today, and they can't tell you what they did with it. 6 months to a year from now.
Look at all these lottery
the,
winners. People winning
yeah.
millions of dollars and broke in
sure.
10 years. Are you crazy?
Right.
Give me $1 million and watch me be okay. I'll be fine.
You know, you get $1 million, acquire a $500,000 home, and don't know how to pay the taxes on the government take
away
from
you. Right.
That's
right. Yes, sir. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing. It's utterly amazing. Uncle Sam's going to get his chunk, ain't he? He's going to get his piece. But, well, okay. Okay. So I just got one other guy that I'd like to bring in. We got about 22 minutes, right quickly, if y'all don't mind. Let me listen to Bevel. Listen to Bevel just for a second. See what he's saying there, and then we'll wrap up our discussion tonight.
You cannot solve a problem if you do not understand the nature and the cause of the problem. In order to solve any problem, you have to do an analysis of the problem, and you've got to go back to the genesis and the cause of that problem. And so we have to go all the way back to the beginning to understand what is wrong. Because I don't care what you believe, and I don't care what your opinion is, if you do not know the truth of what to do, and if you do not know the truth of what caused an error so that you are not doing what you're supposed to do, no matter what you believe, you can never come to do it.
Now, I would argue, guys, this is the number one reason it's difficult to help people, and I'm not going to just say black people, but anybody, is when they're not willing to make an honest self-assessment of where they are and why they're where they are. Help me with that. Somebody get back with me on that.
Well, what you had in that individual that was speaking is what you hear oftentimes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, and I've heard it for a long time.
Okay.
Is that you got blacks that would command the floor and tell blacks in the audience that the conditions that they're in has to go back to some period of time when it began.
Okay.
Well, that's about as false. That's about as false as two left shoes. Because here's the thing. Here's the thing. They are very selected in how far back they go.
When you say,
have you even noticed that? The ones that are talking like him.
Oh, certain individuals. Okay.
Well, the one that's talking. When he said you got to go all the way back. Well, they are very selective on how far back they go.
Okay, I take your point.
Even if it did make a difference.
Interesting.
Some always like to go back 400 years. Well, what happened 600 years, 800, 1,000 years?
Okay. All right. Okay. Now, I happen to know...
And then, guess who the culprit is? Who do you think the culprit is always?
From whose perspective now?
His perspective.
I knew him personally, so I know where he's coming from and the period of the period.
Well,
of
where is he? Where is he coming from? Who's he blaming it on?
He's not blaming on anyone but the individual. And
he wasn't back 400 years. He's blaming it on the white man. He's blaming it on the white man.
Did it say 400 years?
Well, that's where they go when they say go all the way back. How far back do you want when you're talking to somebody that's 24 years old in your audience?
All right. Hold on 1 second. Now, let me just say about where he's coming from, and I used him for that reason, is because what he was speaking to is prior to integration, there was a certain drive that empowered Negroes to own their own businesses, to be self-sufficient, and things of that nature. And he was pointing out the fact that they gave up these rights, collectively speaking, and many of them stopped doing those things that caused them to be successful. And that's where the problem was. He's making reference to, as Andrew Billingsley and McAdoo talks about, black families in America, where there were certain things that African Americans bought into that helped the denigration of a black family and led to some of these social.
All right, let me ask you a question. You say that when they had their own, how many? So name me some businesses you talking that he's talking about.
Well, I know for a fact that there were individuals with SELC that encouraged businesses in the Memphis area and Alabama.
Like what? What kind of business? What was the business involved in?
Some of them were people like Preston Taylor right here in Tennessee had banks. They had there's a Citizens
Bank.
I'm trying to get to you. And I'm not going to go through all of them.
No, you can't.
I'm just saying those type. Many of them had four storefronts. A lot of storefront stores.
All right, to his. Well, here's the thing. That only made a handful. It didn't make all of the people rich or well off. Because if you got a store, you got to depend on people.
Correct.
Coming into your store.
Absolutely.
And so when they saying that blacks was better off before they integrated, that just is not true. Some was.
Well,
especially if you were a business, any business,
but
really.
One would have to consider that, again,
mm-hmm.
you don't know what the possibility could have grown into. Had they been able to be continuous and productive and continue on in that, we don't know because that was taken away, I think was the point.
Well, it wasn't taken away. They chose.
It was taken away.
Didn't nobody take those businesses from black
people?
Many of them were burned down and destroyed.
No, they were
not.
They were.
Okay.
Who burned them down?
St. Louis, there are historical examples of individuals who used to trade in barter, and when they were not, when those traders, the black traders and barters, would not allow them to take advantage of them, came burned down their barns and their farms, took the equipment away from them through riots and mobs and what have you, things of that.
Had in the last couple of years here in the city.
Talking about 200 years ago, not today. That's what we were talking about.
But 200 years ago.
Exactly what you were talking about a few days, just a second ago.
200 years ago. You go back to 1600, there's a whole big book and records kept by Dunn, who later became Dunn and Bradstreet, which lists all the black businesses. And you know one of the things that they complained back in that time? That blacks wouldn't shop with them.
Because
back
they were
in the 1600s. And that goes on in every ethnic group practically. They just do what they want to.
Okay.
Because they weren't able to. There was a law that said they weren't able to shop.
There was a law that said you couldn't go shop where you wanted to.
There was a law that said.
But what? But what?
Great conversation.
Weren't able to.
But what is this law? Let me hear it. Where is it at? Where is this law at?
Hold on.
Where was any of the laws?
That's how we do our thing.
Well, they have to be in, they had to be laws that was, you talking about laws that was created by government bodies?
They were created day by day. Day by day.
Oh, man, you guys.
Hello.
Didn't no laws keep me from, erecting bridges and tall buildings?
Well, let's put you back 200 years ago and let's see if they kept you then.
Yeah, but what has 200 years ago got to do with me today?
Say, Lord, listen to me. Listen to me. One second, guys. Great conversation. Here's the thing. And I want, let's all come back into it. Here's what I want us to focus on. Now, we can talk about what were the mechanisms, right? We can do that, but we don't have that kind of time. We got about 13 minutes tonight. I just wanted to point one idea of offering support, though, today in 2021. It is helpful to look back and to examine and to do an assessment, not so much on everybody as it is yourself. And ask yourself, if I'm 30, I'm 40, I'm 50 years old, right? And I'm facing a certain economic plight. Not to beat yourself up, but ask yourself, how can I change that for the next generation of my children, my grandchildren, or even for myself? What is it that I can do? And if someone wants to support me in that aim, what does that support look like? And that's the point I brought. That's the reason I brought him in, because he made an excellent point about the need for self-reflection, understand the core nature of your problem. See, you can point the finger at somebody else and point the blame to, but at the end of the day, if you're not working towards solving your problem, it's going to continue to be.
Well, I agree with him.
But
I agree with him on that. But the problem is,
Send it to. I'm coming to you. Let me finish.
Okay.
I'll come right to you. We're not running.
The thing
over
is
like
that people be putting these lies out there. I tell you another lie. They say that blacks weren't able to go to school. All right. All right. Well, you know, many
were,
but majority of them went to school. And let me show you how you know this, but nobody ever thinks about this.
Hey, Lewis, gonna take about 2 minutes to make this point, then I'm gonna come.
During World War II, in the invention of the atomic bomb, you had over 22 black physicists, scientists, chemists, and mathematicians with PhDs that worked on the Manhattan Project. Now, this was in World War II in the 1940s. Okay. And these people was probably in their 40s. So that means they had to go to school 20 years before then, in the
1920s.
Young man, come on now.
Joshua, I'm going to come to you, okay? But I don't want us walking over each other. So let him finish
his point then. To say that all blacks were not able to go to school is misleading.
Okay.
Look at your son.
Okay. No question about him. It was either school or this 9.5. I mean, that's just
and no
that
question
was,
about mine neither.
Okay. Gotcha. Good point.
So
good
when
point.
People
right.
say, and they put this out here, and all the blacks they talking about don't ask the question. They think that was everybody. It was not.
I get your point there, sir. I get your point. Let's move around, St. Louis, so we can manage our little time. Hold on, Josh.
Can
don't
I say something really
don't.
Quick?
Go ahead.
In that war... We at 18 went to the military, the whites and the blacks. the military. It was mandatory for the whites to go to war. Mandatory. No doubt about it.
Okay. So what's your point there, Jeff?
It was mandatory. So what he said was false. I could have gone to school, but I had to go to war, and that day and age.
Okay, Judge. Okay, all right. Thank you for sharing that. Let's hear from 72.
You know, the scientists that worked on the Manhattan Project was beyond draft age. But go ahead.
Okay. All right. Let me go ahead, 72.
I was just going to say, we were just getting back to the root of the problem and responsibility and all of that. But when you're recognizing a problem and trying to be responsible, you need to take in all things into account and not exclude some. Don't pretend like some things didn't happen and others did. And now 200 years later or 400 years later, because I am afforded this, or my child is afforded this, that everybody before them was not, and that circumstances wasn't what they were. They were. That's the issue. Now, yeah, today is a different day, but when we're talking about back then, I think we should do that respectfully and honestly.
Okay.
And that creates the problem. Yesterday creates the partial problem of today.
So,
and
if I might.
The other thing is, right now, even today, blacks still don't have the respect that the other race do have. So, even this day and age right now, we still don't get all the respect that we should.
Other people
get.
Are afforded just because of, thank you.
Hold on, Dad.
Well, really, blacks have privilege today. When you look at the private institutions, not the public, private institutions.
Which one?
Your Harvard, your Yale, your Westminster's.
With
the black students at Cornell, black students at those schools,
what about
are
those
spotted. Well, ma'am, can I talk, please? I mean, y'all hate me, I know it, but I'm gonna be here.
I don't hate you. I don't know.
Y'all hate me. Everybody want to jump on me because I be telling you how it is. I've been places many of them have with dream on going. So I'm just sharing expenses, and plus I've been married.
Go ahead.
Have been married.
Well, my wife died.
Yeah, and I was married early too. So go ahead.
Now here's the thing: blacks have privilege in private institution. When it comes down to taking your college entrance exam, they spot black students 310 points before they even start taking the test. Hispanics, they spot by 270, and Asians, they deduct 140, the latest records that I've seen. Now, I would call that privilege.
Okay.
Whites, they don't do – whites start off at zero.
So they already in.
Okay.
There's two things about that. One, a lot of them are already – privilege enough to get in.
Thank you.
That's the one.
They daddy knew somebody.
And another thing, if you look at the platform, if you look at all the states in America, I forgot how many, 500 and how many. There are more whites that get into those states, those colleges right now than on black. And that is the true fact.
Okay.
Well, you, Reuben, in Baltimore in 2019, you only had 18 black students in the high school that passed their math exam with a proficiency out of 3,800. Out of 3,800 in the Baltimore School District, all black school district practically, 18.
Right. So,
now, way back when ain't got nothing to do with that. If that's the case, why come way back when don't have something to do with the Asians? Why come way back when don't have nothing to do with the Nigerians who are just as black as Wesley Snipes, and they outscore all of them, Asians and whites?
Okay. Let's let that be our last word. The guy, we got about 3.5 minutes here to go. And
put a board in the slot.
Great conversation. And those are some legitimate questions that everybody has asked. Hopefully we'll find some answers. But listen, Josh, give me 1 second, man. Give me about 20 seconds of final thoughts because our time is wasted. The conversation got good and the time got away from it. Right quickly,
John. It was a good show, and I love it.
Thank you. You made it good, Josh. You made it good, brother. Your presence made it good. Thank you very much. What about it, 72?
We just should consider all the facts before we start, forming opinions and all that. Great show.
All right. Thank you for joining us. I know you've been working late, Dad. We appreciate you. All right, St. Louis, give me 30 seconds, man. 30 seconds.
So them Nigerians and Africans are just as black as Wesley Snipes, and they outscore all of them.
Okay.
Native black Americans have to be given points before they even sit down and take the test. 310. Asians, they subtract points from. Nigerians are highest educational attainments than any of them, and they are black skin. They don't consider themselves black, but they are quote unquote black skin as it is described today.
Right.
Stop using all these excuses. Do some hard work.
Thank you, St. Louis, for sharing that with me. We appreciate you, my friend. All right. That being said, we're going to turn the floor to Pastor Waller to wrap us up. We've been talking from the topic for the last 2 days. The nature of support. What does it look like? And I hope you go back and listen to our podcast and consider those things. And feel free to post me on Facebook if you have a afterthought or something you want to talk to. BFCInstitute.com is BFCInstitute@gmail.com is our email account if you'd like to shoot me an email and we have some other conversations. All right, but now we turn the floor over to Pastor Waller for a wrap-up for the show here. Pastor?
Hey, Pastor Doctor, it's been very interesting, man. I thank God for you and what you're doing and for all the people who are tuned in. Most of all, I thank God for those who are able to hear. And the Word of God says, faith cometh by hearing. And hearing by the Word of God. As long as you got the Word of God in there, everything is already all right. Glory to God.
All right.
And I just want to yield back to you on that note to let you know that when you got the main line, you can't lose.
He is the main line.
He's the main line.
Gotcha.
You got to keep him on the main line, man.
Yes,
so you can make a call when you need it.
Uh-oh.
You know, when he said, call upon me, Jeremiah said, and I would answer you, and I'll show you great and mighty things that you knew not. That's why it's good to make sure you're on the main line, because he's always there, including. I'll yield back to you on that note, Pastor Doctor.
All right. Well, with that, we'll see you all next week for another episode of Talk Straight. Thank you, Pastor, and all of our callers for joining us here. And we'll see you next week for another episode.
With love and trouble,
it will be all. That's just
it. And I.